Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, had vented himself 5,000 years ago as the son of Nanda and Yasoda in the holy place of Vrindavan. He is not like the modern so-called incarnations of God, who are voted into office by the ignorant public. Krishna's divinity was displayed from his very birth. The great saints and sages and the timeless Vedic scriptures all agreed Krishna's appearance was not the birth of an ordinary person, but the merciful incarnation of the original person, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is the story of how Krishna displayed his supremacy in his childhood just to increase his devotees' love and to teach a great soul a great lesson. One day, Krishna saw that his father, Nanda Maharaj, was preparing for some kind of sacrifice. Although he knew what was going on, still he politely asked,
"My dear father, what is this sacrifice you're getting ready for? What is the result of the sacrifice? And for whom are the offerings? Please explain to me what the sacrifice is for."
"Oh, Krishna, you're only a boy of 7 years. This business of demigod worship is too complicated. I don't think you would understand it."
"Please don't keep any secrets from me, Father. Everyone is working hard for something. Some people understand their work and what will come of it. Others simply work without knowing what they are doing or the result. And a person who works without knowledge does not get as good a result as a person who understands what he is working for. So please explain about the puja to me. Is it just a popular ceremony or a Vedic sacrifice?"
"All right, Gopalaji. This ceremony is more or less traditional. Rainfall is due to the mercy of Lord Indra, and the clouds are his representatives. Because rainfall is so important for our living, we must show some gratitude to this controller of the rain, Maharaj Indra. Water is very important. Without rainwater, why, we cannot farm or produce grains. We would not have any fruits or vegetables, and neither would the cows have any fresh grass to eat. Why, they would not be able to produce any milk. Come to think of it, we cannot live if there is no rain. As a consequence, we should not give up performing the Indra Puja."
Nanda Maharaj, as an educated gentleman, was well aware that every comfort of life is given to us by someone. We should not think everything is just coming by itself. Heat, light, water, air, and so many other necessities are all provided by the powerful administrators of the universe, the demigods. If a person goes to the market and takes something without paying, he is called a thief. Similarly, a person who takes the gifts of the demigods without offering anything in return is a thief also. If we take supplies from the agents of God without using them in a healthy way and without showing gratitude, then we become thieves, and we will be punished by the laws of nature. Nanda concluded, explaining to Krishna,
"So you see, Krishna, we are very dependent on Indra, and that is why we are making such elaborate preparations for the Indra Puja."
"This is no good. I have descended to this world to make sure that human beings are living under true religious principles. I see there is a danger that people will become confused, thinking that there are many gods. I send these demigods forth at the beginning of creation, and they manage the material universe for me. They are my servants, but I am seeing how people may take them to be all in all. Indradev, although only my officer, is getting a little puffed up. He is forgetting his master. I think the time has come to teach him a lesson."
It's easy to understand how Indra could become puffed up. He was the chief.
Chief of the demigods, Indradev ki jai! Lord of the celestial kingdom, Indradev ki jai!
"Now my kingdom is secure and I am happy. And who wouldn't be in my position? Everyone wants to taste this heavenly happiness. And this heavenly nectar, Soma, they come from all over the three worlds for this wonderful drink. They perform sacrifices. They perform great austerities just to come and drink the Soma Rasa with us in our celestial city of gold. And this is just my capital. I am lord of the entire celestial kingdom. I occupy a throne of power, which I must fight to keep. But enough of that. I have conquered my enemies. The demons are beaten and running. Yes, running! And when I go forth into battle on the back of my elephant Airavata, my thunderbolt in my hand, I feel supreme.
Yes, Indra felt supreme, but he was not. He was intoxicated with pride. Sitting on a high seat beneath a canopy as brilliant as the moon, Indra had forgotten. He was God's right hand, but he was not God. One day soon, he would bow down before Lord Krishna, and the magnificent crown on his head would touch the Lord's lotus feet. And that would be Indra's supreme happiness. Krishna knew that he must make Indra angry in order to show him his mistake. So he began to speak in such a way as to be sure to offend the god of the rains.
Here are the flowers for the garlands, Maharaj.
Oh, yes. Let's take them over there.
Father!
Just a moment, son. Are those the flags?
Yes, but I'm not sure where to put them.
All right. You go over there with him, and they'll help you set them up.
Pitaji!
Not now, Gopalaji. I'm busy.
Maharaj, do you think this will be enough flowers?
Well, let's see.
Father, I don't think we should have to perform the Indra Puja.
What?
It's so temporary. We perform the sacrifice now. Indra is pleased and sends rain. But then we just have to start all over again. Next year, at the beginning of the growing season, we will have to go to so much trouble all over again, making another puja for more rain.
But Nandanandana, one has to keep things in order.
Yes, this is important. But human life must have a higher aim. Although there may be so much business that has to go on in this life, an intelligent person isn't interested in blessings that simply come and go. Beloved bridge bossies, whatever one may receive from the demigods is only temporary. We may be sent the rain we need by Indradev, help and strength from Surya the sun god. Lakshmi Devi may send us money or different kinds of happiness, but how long do these things last? Even if you become very pleasing to Indradev and are able to go to the heavenly planets, your long, long life of celestial pleasure will one day end. You will simply have to come back down here again to human birth. You will have to begin all over again, building up your pious favor with the gods.
Krishna is clearly giving the hint here that the same effort made towards satisfying the demigods may be directed towards satisfying him with a better result. The worshipper of the demigods may gain health, wealth, and happiness now, and several thousand years of heavenly life later, until his luck runs out. But the Supreme Lord is unlimited. His favor is unlimited. His mercy is unlimited. And eternal, blissful life of full knowledge with him is also unlimited.
Anyhow, Father, all of these gods are just order carriers of the Supreme God. He is the Supersoul in the hearts of men and demigods.
I can see what you're saying, child, and I'm sure you're quite right. But, well, I just don't know what to say. The Indra Puja is a part of our way of life.
My dear father, Indra is pouring water on the ocean as well as the land. It does not depend on worshiping him. And just see, he is waiting for his puja. Only then can he send rain. He is dependent on your good works to benedict you. If you just do your duties nicely, you will get the results of sacrifices.
It seems logical.
The boy has a point, Nandaraja.
Well, I suppose it is true.
Yes, we are Vaishyas. Our duties are banking, farming, buying and selling, and protection of the cow. We should make sacrifice to satisfy the local brahmanas of Vrindavan and the pasturing ground of Govardhan Hill. The cows should also be honored.
That is a very good idea, Krishna. And since you feel so strongly about it, We'll make a separate sacrifice. Later, after the Indra sacrifice.
Oh, no, Father, don't delay. The sacrifice for the Brahmanas on Govardhan Hill will take a lot of time. Better take all the things you have already gotten together for the Indra Puja and use them for the Govardhan Puja.
Oh, Krishna. All right, my child. We will perform the sacrifice just as you say.
Just tell us how you want the puja done.
Yes, what will we need?
Prepare very nice foodstuffs of all descriptions from the grains and ghee collected for the sacrifice. Cook dal, rice, halava, pakora, puri, and all kinds of milk preparations like sweet rice, sweet ball, sandesh ras, gula, and laddu. Invite the learned brahmanas who can chant the Vedic hymns and who can offer oblations to the fire. The brahmanas should be given all kinds of grains. Then decorate all the cows and feed them very well. After doing this, give money in charity to the brahmanas. As for the lower animals, such as the dog, and the lower grades of people who are considered untouchable, like the chandalas, they may also be given sumptuous prasadam to eat. After feeding nice grasses to the cows, the sacrifice of Govardhan Puja may immediately begin. This sacrifice will very much satisfy me.
So, the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna convinced the cowherds to stop the Indra Yajna and begin the Govardhan Puja. This was the first step in his plan to chastise Indra, who was very puffed up at being the supreme controller of the heavenly planets. The honest and simple cowherd men, headed by Nanda Maharaj, accepted Krishna's proposal and carried out everything in detail just as he desired. They performed the Govardhan worship and walked around the hill in respect. To this day, the people of Vrindavan still dress nicely and gather at the foot of Govardhan Hill once a year. They offer worship and circumambulate the hill, leading their cows all around. Nanda Maharaj's cows and those of the other cowherdmen were nicely decorated with gold on their horns, embroidered silken wrappers, and silver bells. While the cowherdmen circumambulated the hill with them, the gopis, the milkmaids of Braja, also went around Govardhan Hill in bull-driven carts. They were luxuriantly dressed and were chanting the glory of Krishna's pastime. After the Govardhan Puja, the people of Vrindavan, feeling completely satisfied, returned home. When King Indra realized that the sacrifice offered by the Vrajavasis had been stopped by Krishna, he became furious.
They what? They what? Just see the impudence of these cowherds of Vrindavan. They're nothing but inhabitants of the forest. But being infatuated with their friend Krishna, who is nothing but an ordinary human being, they dare to defy the demigods. He is nothing but a child. But by leaving this child, they have enraged me!
Krishna's making Indra angry and is later chastising him is a clear instruction to his devotees that those who are engaged in Krishna consciousness have no need to worship any demigod. Even if it is found that a demigod has become angry, Krishna gives his devotees all protection, and they should completely depend on his mercy.
By neglecting the authority of the demigods, the Brajvasis shall now suffer the consequences. Send the Sambartaka cloud to me.
This cloud is the most powerful of your servants. It is invited when there is need to flood the entire cosmos. Surely you're needing the services of some less destructive clouds to punish these people?
I said the Sambartaka cloud! The people of Vrindavan have become too puffed up with their comfort and riches and are too confident in the presence of their tiny friend, Krishna. He is simply talkative, childish, and ignorant of the complete situation, although he is thinking himself very advanced in knowledge. Sambartaka! your companion clouds to go and inundate Vrindavan. Everyone there should be destroyed, along with their cows.
What do you mean you're afraid to carry out these orders?
You shall go, and I will go too, riding on my elephant with great storms before, behind, and on either side of me. And I shall use all of my strength to punish these offenders from Raj.
Thus ordered by Indradev, all the dangerous clouds appeared over Vrindavan and began pouring water incessantly with all their strength and power. There was constant lightning and thunder, blowing of severe winds and rain falling harder and harder like a shower of piercing sharp arrows. It was coming as thick as pillars, filling all the lowlands with water. As well as rain, there were high winds and showers of falling blocks of ice.
Help! Bring the cows over here, everyone!
Every living creature in Vrindavan began to tremble with the cold. They all came to Krishna to take shelter at his lotus feet, especially the cows, who bowed down their heads and, taking their calves under their bodies, went to Krishna as their only source of deliverance. They all prayed to him. Krishna knew that the heavy rains, the huge chunks of ice falling from the sky, and strong winds were all a deliberate show of anger on Indra's part. He thought to himself,
"This demigod, who thinks himself supreme, has shown his great power, but now I will break his pride. I will protect my pure devotees of Vrindavan, who are completely under my protection."
Thinking in this way, Lord Krishna immediately picked up Govardhan Hill with one hand, exactly as a child picks up a mushroom from the ground.
My dear brothers, my dear father, my beloved Brajabasis, you can now safely enter under Govardhan Hill and be protected from the storm. Don't be afraid of the hill, thinking it will fall from my hand. I have lifted this hill to protect you, just like a huge umbrella. Be happy, along with your animals, under this great umbrella of Govardhan Hill.
The inhabitants of Vrindavan and all the cows stayed there under the hill for 1 week without being bothered by hunger or any other discomfort. They were simply astonished to see how Krishna was tirelessly holding up the mountain with the little finger of his left hand. All of the gopis were admiring Krishna's wonderful strength, and Krishna was smiling at the gopis. From gazing on the beautiful young gopis, Krishna's hand began to shake. On seeing Krishna's hand tremble, all the cowherd men became disturbed, and there was a terrible rumbling sound as if the mountain might fall. Everyone began to pray to Krishna for safety. Seeing the cowherd men's anxiety, Lord Balaram was smiling to himself, because he knew Krishna would never let the mountain slip from his hand. But when Krishna saw Balaram smile, he thought Balaram had seen him smiling at the gopis, and he became bashful. Even when he was exhibiting the powers of God, those supermost devotees, the inhabitants of Vrindavan, were blinded by their intense, intimate love for him. They always simply thought of him as their own dear child. For instance, when Mother Yasoda saw Krishna holding up Govardhan Hill with his left hand, she began thinking,
"Now my little boy is in a dangerous position. My eyes are so filled with tears that I can hardly see Krishna anymore. And my voice is so choked up with anxiety that although I want to help Krishna by giving him some instruction, I can't even speak."
Mother Yasoda actually became stunned in ecstatic love. Krishna, the shelter of all living entities, was balancing the mountain on his little finger, his curling black hair scattered about his shoulders. When Mother Yasoda noticed that he seemed to be perspiring, she began to tremble. To relieve her fear, Krishna started making different funny faces at his mother, and she became happy and smiled again. The cowherd boys of Vrindavan, Krishna's playmates, were proud of their friend and his amazing accomplishment. Because of being the Lord's friends, they sometimes think themselves as good as he. So, while they all waited under the umbrella of Govardhan, one of the cowherd boys said to Krishna,
"My dear friend, you have been standing for the last 7 days and nights without any rest. This is bothering us very much, because we think you are trying to do something that is too hard. We don't think you should have to stand alone holding up this heavy mountain anymore. You can just transfer it onto Sudama's hand. If you don't think Sudama can support the hill, at least you can change hands. Instead of using your left hand, please transfer the hill to your right hand so we can give your left hand a massage."
In this way, the cowherd boys showed how close they had become with Krishna, even to the point of considering themselves to be his equal. Finally, Indra became thunderstruck and baffled at seeing Krishna's amazing mystic power.
"Sambartaka! Great storms! High winds! Stop and return, all of you! Go back! Go back to my kingdom! Stop your raining and thundering and go back!"
"My dear cowherd men, now you can leave and take your wives, children, cows, and valuables. It's all over. The flood is going down and the waters of the river are shrinking back within her banks."
"All right, let's go.
Let's get these oxen hitched here.
Bring the cows together.
This has to be lifted under the wagon."
"Are we going now, Mata? Can I take my calves back to the Goshala? Is Krishna going to put the hill down now, Mata? Is the rain over?"
"Bring your sister, dear."
"All right, children, line up here."
"Soda, your boy is simply wonderful.
Give that to your father so he can put it on the wagon."
"Here, let me help you with it."
The cowherd men loaded their belongings on ox carts and left with their cows and families. After they had cleared everything out from under the hill, Lord Krishna slowly replaced Govardhan Hill in exactly the same position as it had been, and where it remains to this day. When everything was done, all the residents of Vrindavan came to Krishna and embraced him in ecstatic love. Many of them were crying in great affection. In the heavens, different demigods began to shower flowers on the Lord to show their great satisfaction. They blew conch shells and played drums. Finally, Krishna, surrounded by his dear friends and cows, returned home. Indra had finally realized his terrible mistake. He was ashamed and embarrassed. Riding on Airavata, his celestial white elephant, Indra met Krishna alone in the forest. With Indra was a Sorabhi cow from the spiritual world. Although Indra was wearing a crown as dazzling as the sunshine, he fell down at Krishna's lotus feet. Indra knew all about Krishna, because Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, was his master. But he had not believed that Krishna could come down and live in Vrindavan among cowherd men. Now he repented, and with folded hands, began to offer prayers.
"My dear Lord, being full of false prestige, I thought you had offended me by not letting the cowherd men perform the Indra Jagya. I thought you wanted to enjoy the offerings that were arranged for my puja and were taking my profits in the name of a Govardhan sacrifice. Now, by your grace, I can understand you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead and that you are transcendental to all material qualities. If someone thinks that when you come into this world, you take on the material qualities of goodness, passion, and ignorance, they are much mistaken. Your lordship is never touched by the laws of material nature when you are here in this material world. My dear Lord, there are many fools like myself who think themselves to be the Supreme Lord or all in all within the universe. You are so merciful that without punishing their offenses, you make a plan which defeats their egotism."
Actually, Krishna had thought about retaliating against Indra's anger by destroying the heavenly kingdom. But when he thought of how insignificant the King of Heaven was, he changed his mind. He decided to punish Indra by embarrassing him. Indra could now remember who Krishna was, and he was overflowing with praises.
My dear Lord, you are the Supreme Father, the Supreme Spiritual Master, and the Supreme King. So you have every right to chastise wrongdoers because you are the well-wisher of all the living beings who are just like your sons, disciples, and subjects. O Govinda, by your own desire, you appear auspiciously on the earth planet to chastise the fools who claim to be God. In this world, there is an unending competition for fame and power. Being frustrated in becoming a great leader of society, a foolish person finally claims to be God. There are many fools like me, but when they come to their senses, they engage in your transcendental service again. That is the purpose of your chastising persons who are envious of you. My Lord, I have made a great offense at your feet. Please excuse me, because I am fool number one. Please bless me so that I cannot be so foolish again. I appeal to you that I am your eternal servant. So please, excuse me.
My dear Indra, I stopped your sacrifice to remind you that I am your master. I am the master of all the demigods as well. All your opulences are due to my mercy. I can show anyone my favor and I can chastise anyone because no one is superior to me. If I find anyone to be overwhelmed by false pride, I take away his riches and power to show him my mercy. Relieved of his material prestige, he becomes a great soul by surrendering unto me. That is his real riches.
So Krishna accepted Indra's apology. The spiritual Saurabhi cow, who had come with Indra, thanked Krishna for protecting the cows during the flood. She called him the master of all mystic power and the super soul of the universe, and then she bathed him in her milk. Indra was bathed in the Ganges water from the trunk of his great elephant. Then many demigods and goddesses appeared on the scene, and they bathed Krishna in Saurabhi milk and Ganges water together. There was a constant shower of flowers from the air. Gandharvas sang the holy name. Celestial maidens danced in joy. Krishna was very pleased with all of them. The cows overflooded the surface of the earth with their ecstatic milk. The waters of the rivers began to flow, giving nourishment to the trees. The trees, blossoming with fruits and flowers of different tastes, began to pour forth drops of honey. The hills and mountains began to produce potent medicinal herbs and valuable jewels. Lower animals, who were usually dangerous, forgot their envy and became tame. All this happened because of the Lord's being there. And in this way, the matter was nicely and joyfully settled.